Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope your weekend treated you well. Always appreciate you being here. Quick shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Leif Erickson, TBK Music, Sammy Voss, and Allison Tuckwab. Appreciate you guys checking out those memberships. Going to have a ton of content coming out, obviously with the draft coming up, bonus episodes every single week for Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, commercial free nonetheless, also a weekly members only Q&A. I believe Saturday for the draft is going to be members only as well. So there's going to be some huge benefits coming up to signing up. So make sure to check that out. Always appreciate all of you that are doing the Pack-A-Day Podcast memberships. As we start this Monday, we are looking at April 8th. And the draft is coming up. We've got only a few weeks left before it is here. Not even full 3 weeks. So as you can imagine, we are going to be transitioning into more and more draft content. On the YouTube channel, of course, Ross is going to continue doing his daily draft episodes. I'm going to be doing a lot more draft-centric content over these final 3 weeks. And of course, once the Packers make their selections, we get to unwrap all of our presents. So we'll be breaking down those in huge, great detail. On the audio side, we've got more draft-centric stuff coming on the audio Pack-A-Day Podcast, and of course, Ross and myself as well. So tons of draft stuff coming up. Should be a really fun few weeks as we get to sort of preview who Green Bay will be selecting, could be selecting, and then ultimately who Green Bay does select. And with that being said, I want to start off today with what I think is a very logical prospect to break down in great detail for a variety of different reasons, and that is linebacker Edgerrin Cooper. And let's start with why. Why is Edgerrin Cooper a name that we should be keeping a very close eye on? I've seen a lot of people that have mocked Edgerrin Cooper to 41, pick 41, Green Bay's first, second round pick for Green Bay. And I think that is a very logical spot for Edgerrin Cooper to land. I think Green Bay would be very attracted to Edgerrin Cooper at pick 41. I think that's a very realistic possibility. I think if he doesn't go 41 and he's still there with Green Bay's second round pick, I think that's within the realm of possibility. But I would not completely rule out pick 25 either. My gut tells me, and after watching him, and hopefully you see it the same way after our breakdown today, I believe that he has a real opportunity to go in the first round of this draft. Now, I'm not necessarily saying or suggesting that Green Bay should take him at pick 25. I'm not saying they shouldn't, but I'm not necessarily suggesting they should. But I don't think it's without or outside of the realm of possibility that they could move down from pick 25 to, say, pick 30, pick 31, pick 32, and take Edgerrin Cooper there. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they could move up from pick 41 to pick 31, 32, 33, 34, somewhere in that range, and take Edgerrin Cooper there. So you talk about a player who I think has range anywhere from Green Bay's first round pick to their second round pick. He's likely going to go in that range somewhere. And probably the top of that range is Green Bay at pick 25. And probably the bottom of that range is Green Bay's second round pick. So you're looking at about three picks in a small range that Green Bay has that they could be targeting him and could be moving up or down the draft board in order to select him. Meanwhile, Edgerrin Cooper is already one of the players on Green Bay's short list of top 30 visits. If you are not familiar, the past couple seasons, players who have been on top 30 visits have become Green Bay Packers at a pretty significant rate, either via the draft, undrafted free agency, or even free agency or practice squads down the line. They look at those players and they continue to have interest in those players if they become available eventually. This is a top 30 visit. Green Bay likely has some level of interest in him. Again, is within the range of where they're going to be selecting on multiple occasions. And per reports and sources, they also met with him at the Shrine Bowl. So there's been a level of interest in Edgerrin Cooper, which is, again, why I think it makes such logical sense to do a very big deep dive into Edgerrin Cooper today. Now, let's take a look at Edgerrin Cooper from a first round standpoint, because I think this is still a very interesting conversation to have. Now, if you remember, and if you listened to the episode, I don't know if it was a week ago now or somewhere around there, where we did sort of our historical analysis of what Green Bay likes to do in the first round, and we broke it down. 17 out of the 22 players were premium position players that they selected either in the first round or with their first pick being, Kevin King and Jordy Nelson, who were their first pick in that draft, drafted very high in the second round. So of those 22 players over the past however many years, ever since Aaron Rodgers, 2005, 2008? I don't know, whatever it was. So 17 out of 22 were premium position players. Now, Edgerrin Cooper is not a premium position player. That's not something that they normally consider. Premium position players, quarterback, offensive tackle, defensive line, edge rusher, and outside corner. So usually that would kind of limit the likelihood that Edgerrin Cooper would maybe be on their board. But what else do they look for? High relative athletic score. Again, I don't think they're targeting specifically relative athletic score from a Packers standpoint. I don't think they're looking at Kentley Platy's RAS database and seeing like, oh, yep, so-and-so has a 9.3. He's on our board. I don't think it's anything like that. But if you're a Packer fan and you want to do an easy correlation to the players that they usually like, it is usually players with extremely high relative athletic scores. In fact, the average of those picks has been an 8.3. 11 in a row have been 8.0 or higher. And then you've got 15 of the last 22 that have been 8.0 or higher. So they generally favor high relative athletic scores. Players from a power conference, 21 out of 22 were players from a power conference, and 19 out of 22 were players that were either age 21 or 22 on draft day. So this all fits, or I should say 22 or under, because I think Kenny Clark was 20 on draft day, but 20, 21 or 22, 19 of 22 were those players. So outside of the premium position being off-ball linebacker, Edgerrin Cooper hits every single one of those things. High relative athletic score, power conference, 22 years old. He just doesn't necessarily hit that premium position. But what I want to do really quick is look at those premium positions, because I think you can make a pretty strong argument that premium position might not make the most sense for Green Bay to spend on in this draft. Premium positions, again, are considered quarterback, offensive tackle, defensive line, edge, or outside corner. Those are the general premium positions that they target. Well, we know quarterback's not going to be the play, so that eliminates one of them. Offensive tackle is very interesting. Offensive tackle, they clearly need some offensive line depth. But what you end up with, if you draft an offensive tackle, is one of three things. Either Rashid Walker is on the bench, either your first round pick that you just took is on the bench, or Zach Tom has to move positions. And I don't necessarily think that any of those is an ideal situation. I actually really like Rashid Walker at left tackle and think that his best play is ahead of him. And I think you want to continue to develop that. I believe that Zach Tom has played so well at right tackle that you don't exactly want to entertain the idea of moving him off of that position. And also, no matter what, even if the rookie offensive tackle is going to take a little bit of time to develop, well, then one, he's on the bench. Two, it's not somebody who's necessarily helping you right now, which doesn't necessarily matter for Green Bay. They're going to take the player who they think is going to be best in the long term. But you now have that player on the bench. And even if you take that player and he's an awesome right tackle, let's say they take a Amarius Mims or a Tyler Guyton or whoever, insert whoever you want. They take him and they put him at right tackle and he's amazing. And Rashid Walker steps up and he's continuing to be great or like gets better and is great at left tackle. That's a great situation. But what you did not do is actually draft a player for a premium position. What I mean by that is you're moving Zach Tom inside to guard or center in that situation. So you actually didn't add a premium position player. Yes, you added one to the outside, but because of that, it took one of your premium position players in Zach Tom and was forced to kick them inside because of your player versatility and what you can't start three tackles. So you have two starting tackles. You adding a third doesn't actually necessarily add another premium position player. It just kicks one of your existing ones to a non-premium position. Defensive line. I think defensive line actually makes sense, but you do have 5 53-man roster players already. That's number one. And then number two is, I don't know that any of the top defensive linemen are exactly Green Bay's cup of tea in this draft. I do think they would consider Murphy, but I think there's a really great chance that he's gone by 25 and he doesn't exactly hit their usual size thresholds. Neither does exactly Newton. And we don't know like the full testing there either for Newton if he hits everything. And then we also, like, I don't know that a Braden Fisk is going to be somebody that they consider that high in the draft. And even if they did, probably doesn't fully hit their weight thresholds either. So it's tough to peg a defensive lineman that makes perfect sense there in that situation. Edge rusher, there's not an edge rusher, in my opinion, anywhere near 25 that makes sense for Green Bay. I do think like a Jared Verse would be, like, he's just going to be well gone by that point. So I don't think there's an edge rusher that makes sense here. And then outside corner. Yes, I think you could, you know, flirt with some outside corners. And certainly Cooper DeJean is somebody that you have to consider, you know, in that situation as well. But now you're down to like one or two players. And outside corner isn't exactly a huge need either because of Jair, Valentine, and Stokes. Where if they have versatility, like DeJean, where you can play him in the slot or at safety, but then again, you're not drafting a premium position player, you're drafting him for a non-premium position. So because of that, I don't know that a premium position player in this draft, based on the players that are out there, based on what they need, and like based on the entire situation and scenario, is actually the most ideal for Green Bay in this particular draft. And I also think we need to remember that, yes, Green Bay has this ideal sort of player that they have in mind with all of these perfect traits and scenarios and everything that they like that we've gone over. But when they get to more that, you know, final third of the draft, they start opening up their minds a little bit, meaning they probably know at that point they're not going to get everything they like. For example, at pick 22, they took Quay Walker, a non-premium position at that spot. Just so happens to play the same exact position as Edgerrin Cooper. At pick 28, they took Devontae Wyatt, who was 24 years old at the time of being drafted, 2 years older than what they usually like to do at any point in the first round in the draft. At pick 21, they took Darnell Savage as a non-premium position player. So as they get, again, into that final third, it does seem like they're willing to bend and go outside of their ideal criteria a little bit if it makes sense for the player and if it makes sense for the fit. So again, how does Edgerrin Cooper fit within that criteria? Yes, he's that non-premium position, but he does come from a power conference. He's 22 years old, has a 9.13 relative athletic score, is taken after, or like if they took him at 25, would be taken after where they took Quay Walker, an off-ball linebacker at pick 21. And as far as what they usually like to do at linebacker per the Green Bay draft guide, this is from the 2023 version. Make sure you get your 2024 version, but they usually like high relative athletic score players and players that have a broad jump in the 80th percentile or better. Now, we know he hits the relative athletic score. He does not quite hit that broad jump threshold. The ideal is 80%. Edgerrin Cooper's is 69%. Now, I don't think that's a big enough differentiator or, deterrent, I should say, from Green Bay taking him at that spot if they really like him. And I think what you always have to do in this situation is measure, like, what are they trying to accomplish? I can promise you that Green Bay is not concerned on the football field of what Edgerrin Cooper can broad jump. They don't care. That's not a real thing that happens in a football game. You don't see a bunch of guys broad jumping through the course of an NFL game. So what are they trying to measure? What are they trying to weed out? Broad jump is measuring your explosivity, your ability to explode off of your feet and go make plays. That's what it's measuring. And it goes along with obviously your high jump and your acceleration and all of that. So Green Bay's trying to find these high-end athletes. And here's the big thing I will say. If you are looking for an explosive athlete, you don't need to check Edgerrin Cooper's broad jump. You can check his tape because his explosiveness jumps off the tape. So I don't think Green Bay is going to concern themselves that his broad jump was only 69% because they're looking for explosive players and Edgerrin Cooper is 1,000,000% an explosive player at the off-ball linebacker position. The other thing I would question a little bit is his weight. He's only 230 pounds and that's a little on the lighter side, but somebody like Isaiah McDuffie, and I know they didn't take McDuffie in the first round, but their current starter next to Quay Walker, Isaiah McDuffie is 227 pounds now as a fourth-year player. You know, you would think that with time, Cooper's going to put on some functional strength along the way, unlike what basically, you know, Isaiah McDuffie has done up until this point. So again, I don't think anything here is a deterrent for Green Bay to take Adrian Cooper if they want to, and especially because it is a huge position of need for Green Bay. And even if you feel okay with Quay Walker and Isaiah McDuffie, which you should not, if I'm being totally honest, it's fine. It's not dire, but it's not good, and it's certainly not great. And you certainly need upgrade, you need competition, and you need depth. And they don't have any of that on the roster right now. And Adrian Cooper would be somebody that would be, at minimum, a pretty immediate upgrade for Isaiah McDuffie. And if at minimum, like a huge upgrade to anyone that's the number three linebacker on your roster currently, and could, in my opinion, be your immediate number one linebacker in Green Bay, which is where that upgrade potential comes in as well. All right, with all of that in mind, let's take a look at what Adrian Cooper brings to the table, and let's go through his full scouting report. So he is a 6'2", 230-pound off-ball linebacker. He was a senior this past season at Texas A&M, spent his entire college career at Texas A&M. He is 22 years old. He will turn 23 in November. In high school, he was a four-star recruit coming out of college. In this past season in 2023, he was a member of the SEC First Team and a 2023 Consensus All-American. His stats this past season, 84 tackles, 17 tackles for loss, 8 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. In his career, 205 career tackles, 30 and a half tackles for loss, 8.5 career sacks. Yes, 8 of those came last year. 2 interceptions, 8 passes defended, 3 forced fumbles, 2 fumble recoveries. Baseball season is officially back, and what a heck of a start for those Milwaukee Brewers. But just as we get set to wrap up an epic NCAA tournament, baseball is back, and it's better than ever when pairing it with America's number one fantasy sports app, Prize Picks. I know what some of you are thinking. All of these fantasy sports apps are complicated and hard to understand. That is simply not the case with Prize Picks. Prize Picks is super simple to play. I've literally gone in, found entries that I wanted to select, made my picks, and finished the entire process in under 60 seconds. Also, withdrawals are easy, payouts are easy, and they have an enormous selection of players and stat types to choose from that make the selection process super easy. All right, here's a true story. I did a fantasy baseball draft with my friends this year. Half of my team is already hurt, and I've already used up all of my transactions for the week. It is an absolute nightmare. Normally, I'd be ticked off, but I didn't even bat an eye this year. I didn't care at all because I opened up my Prize Picks app, made all new selections with players that weren't hurt, and if I'm being totally honest, it's a lot more fun this way anyway. This week, I'm keeping an eye on Bobby Witt Jr., Luis Robert, and Julio Rodriguez, 3 of my absolute favorite baseball players. But enough about me. It's time for you to get in on the fun with Prize Picks. So download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. His athleticism, as we mentioned, has a 9.13 relative athletic score, has a 97th percentile 40-yard dash for the position, 79th percentile short shuttle, 58th percentile three cone, 72nd percentile vertical jump, 68th percentile broad jump, 74th percentile in height, and 40th percentile in weight. He has a very similar athletic profile to CJ Mosley, the former Alabama linebacker, New York Jet, and Baltimore Raven. But he's more athletic than CJ Mosley. Remember, Mosley was a first round pick in the draft. From a PFF standpoint, in 2021, had a 64.1 grade on 339 snaps. In 2022, had a 66.1 grade on 621 snaps. And this past season, had a 90.8 grade on 609 snaps. In addition, here were his grades this past season from PFF broken down category by category. He had an 87.6 run defense grade, a 73.7 tackling grade, an 86.4 pass rush grade, and an 85.5 coverage grade. So he graded out well in run defense, tackling, pass rush, and coverage as an off-ball linebacker. That is a great group of traits and just overall grades to have for that particular position. They had him graded with 27 pressures. They marked him for 10 sacks. Remember, they don't do half sacks, so they actually gave him credit for 10 sacks. He did have a 12.8% missed tackle percentage, which isn't bad. It's not great. There were some opportunities that we'll talk about on tape and why that happens a little bit with Adrian Cooper, but it's, I would say, an average-ish missed tackle percentage for off-ball linebacker. He had 56 stops, which, if you want to know what a stop is, they define it as a tackle that constitutes a failure for the offense. So 56 stops this past season. In coverage, he was only targeted 16 times. He gave up 14 completions on those 16 attempts for an 87.5% completion percentage. Only 132 yards, though, against him in the passing game. No touchdowns, no interceptions, two passes defensed, and 101.1 rating. So that completion percentage is high, but very few yards given up and no touchdowns given up for Adrian Cooper while, again, breaking up two passes. Per Next Gen Stats, if you're into Next Gen Stats, they gave him a production score of 83, which was fourth amongst the off-ball linebacker draft class. They gave him an athleticism score of 78, which is fifth amongst off-ball linebackers in this draft class. And they gave him a total score of 82, which was tied with Peyton Wilson for first amongst off-ball linebackers. So that's where they graded him, tied for first overall when you combine their version of production and athleticism into one overall grade. Again, tied with Wilson for first overall amongst off-ball linebackers. If you want to look at some big boards throughout the course of the draft sphere, Daniel Jeremiah has him 26th on his big board. Green Bay just happens to pick 25th. Jeremiah thinks of him very highly and as an immediate starter at off-ball linebacker from day one. For whatever it's worth, Daniel Jeremiah, one of the people I trust the most from an analytical standpoint when it comes to draft stuff, and he has him pretty high on his board. PFF has him 62nd on the board, ESPN has him 40th, and the consensus big board has him at 42nd overall. And that's where we get that range where 26th on Daniel Jeremiah's board, that's one pick after Green Bay selects, 62nd on PFF's, that's a little bit past Green Bay's second round pick, and the consensus is 42, a pick after Green Bay selects at pick 41. Like I said, Green Bay's first round pick is probably his ceiling, and Green Bay's second round pick is probably about his floor. And again, they have three picks in that time frame with a lot of flexibility to move up and down the draft board during that time. All right, here's my specific scouting report as I watch probably way too much of Adrian Cooper over the course of the past couple days. All right, from a strength standpoint, let's start with athleticism and speed because he has it in spades and it jumps off the tape, as I mentioned earlier. The biggest thing I can say is that when he triggers and goes towards a ball carrier or a potential pass catcher, he is a missile to that player. And he can accelerate with extreme speed to get to exactly where he needs to on the football field. And when we talk about sideline to sideline ability and, you know, able to get anywhere they need to on the field, that is exactly what you are seeing when you watch the tape of him. He has that legit sideline to sideline ability. He is an easy mover, meaning like it looks effortless to him. You know, sometimes you watch a player, that you just see that they're putting max effort to get from point A to point B, and it still doesn't even necessarily seem that fast. This is just easy movement. It doesn't even look like he's trying that hard, and he goes from 0 to 100 in a blink of an eye. And that's exactly what you want to see out of a freak style athlete. And again, when you're watching him, you don't have to watch long and you don't have to watch hard and you don't have to be an NFL scout to recognize the type of speed that he has the ability to play with. So that is the very first thing. And of course, that athleticism too. You know, when you're a 90th percentile athlete at the position, and we can talk about like, you know, some of this isn't like elite traits. When we talked about his three cone, his short shuttle, they're extremely good, but they're not like 90th, 80th percentile. Same thing with his vert and his broad jump. We're talking about 68th, 72nd, 58th, 79th percent. You know, some of these aren't super high end, but when you put the total package together and that he's really good at just about everything, and even just sometimes screw the actual measurables, because I think sometimes what we lose track of is it is great to have high end measurables. This is not to bash the Packers here, but how many times have we seen the Packers draft a player with high-end measurables and they don't play fast? And on the flip side, a Davante Adams. Davante Adams was a really good athlete, but he wasn't the 99th percentile athlete. He just wasn't. Jeff Janis is the 99th percentile athlete or even better. And Devonta Adams, I think, was somewhere in like the 70s, maybe 80s at the highest, but I think he was in this like 70s. But it's Adams that plays so fast and the game is so slow for him that's what I care about. Jeff Janis, all the raw natural talent in the world, but he did not play football at a slowed down high level of play. That was Devonta. So yes, he wasn't the 99th percentile in a lot of this stuff outside of the 40-yard dash, which he tested really well at, but you see the athleticism oozing off the page, and that's what I care about so much more. Change of direction is interesting. Now, I saw him stop on a dime and change direction as he was coming forward in the run game, and there's certain plays where you just rewind and watch over and rewind and watch over and rewind to watch over again and again. That was one of those where I'm like, whew, like that is ridiculous change of direction ability for a player of his size, and meaning his height. I was massively impressed. Now, there are times, specifically when he's backing up and going into coverage, where you will see a little bit more stiffness in his change of direction. So I've seen, some people say, he doesn't have great change of direction. I have seen him do incredible change of direction stuff on the field. He tested well, in the three cone and the short shuttle, not elite, but very well in both of those. But I've seen enough to know that the change of direction is there. And even though the testing wasn't elite, and even though sometimes when he's, breaking down in coverage, it can be a little stiff. Overall, I know that change of direction is there. I believe in it. And I know that it's something that is going to serve him well over the course of his NFL career. He just needs to get a little bit more technical in how he is going backwards and how he is dropping into coverage. And once he masters that change of direction will come to the forefront. In the meantime, it's going to be something that he needs to continue to master. But I see it on tape that he's capable of doing it. And when he does do it, and when he triggers moving forward, and when he's going towards the ball carrier, he can stop on a dime, do a full, 180 the other way, and do it fluidly. And that's what I see, from a change of direction standpoint. The next thing is his intensity and his hitting. So let's start with intensity. He plays like he is meant to find the ball carrier. He plays like he is upset if there is somebody that has the ball and he's not tackling them. You want to talk about somebody who could come in the middle of this defense and play the game the right way and want to come forward and attack. That's exactly what you're getting in Edgerrin Cooper. And there will be some things he needs to work on. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But his intensity level, his ability to fly to the football, his complete reckless abandon. I mean that in like a good complimentary way of like coming forward and throwing his body around. Those are great things that Green Bay could very much use on the second level of that defense, and specifically in Jeff Hafley's defense. So that is another aspect of this that I think is super, super important. And you will see him absolutely level some people within the run game and within the pass game as well. So he's got that hard-hitting ability, that intensity, and that attitude that I think Green Bay desperately needs on the second level. Next, he is an elite blitzer and showed that this past season. We talked about the 8 sacks or PFF crediting him with 10 sacks, and he can blitz from a variety of different ways. He can come off the edge, and he does a great job disguising his blitz. There'll be times where it doesn't look like he's going to come at all, and then he just comes screaming off the edge. He does a great double A-gap blitz. He will come right up the A-gap, whatever it takes. And he, again, using that ability to trigger and just accelerate and use his explosiveness to get to wherever he wants to go, that serves him very, very well as a blitzer. And what we talk about when we talk about rushing the passer for edge rushers is closing speed and that closing ability. Because there are a lot of pass rushers that they can maybe turn the corner or they can, use a great move to get by somebody, but they don't have that closing ability to get to the quarterback and actually bring them down. That's not the case here with Edgerrin Cooper. If he gets anywhere near, like we talked about, he's got that trigger and missile ability. He is a heat seeker at that point. You are not getting away from him. He is just too fast. And on the same token, we can talk about spying the quarterback. If you need somebody to spy on the second level, a Jalen Hurts or a Lamar Jackson or whomever it might be. Now, some of those, like Lamar is a special player. I'm not saying it's always going to be perfect, but he has pretty elite traits to be able to go and stay on the second level. And he showed it on tape in college that he can stand back and he can wait for the quarterback to try to go outside of the, you know, the pocket. And then the other thing too here is he takes great angles to the outside. So there were multiple plays on tape. There's the Alabama game. There's another game that I'm forgetting off the top of my head where the quarterback starts to roll to the right and he just beelines it, takes the perfect angle and goes right to the quarterback and they have no chance. Like there are numerous occasions where that is on tape, where he does a great job spying the quarterback, taking a great angle, exploding to the quarterback and making a play either in the backfield or right around the line of scrimmage. So his ability to spy and blitz, in my opinion, something that he can come in and do right away. He also does a tremendous, tremendous job of diagnosing running back screens. There's one play in particular where he has three blockers coming out at him. Now, the first blocker kind of goes in a different direction, but then he splits two other blockers. Running back cuts to the side, and he still gets his arm out and trips up the running back and makes an unreal play. Should have had no opportunity to dig that wide or that running back screen out whatsoever, but he did, and it was phenomenal. He also is phenomenal at wide receiver screens, and this goes back to his sideline to sideline ability. Multiple plays on tape where there's a wide receiver screen to the outside, and that first receiver is going to take the corner, you know, that's blocking in front of him, is going to take the cornerback out. And by the time that that ball gets to that wide receiver and that wide receiver makes his first move either to the, you know, outside or to the inside, Edgerrin Cooper is pretty much on him right away. And that is such an impressive trait to have. And as we see more and more of these wide receiver screens, you know, kind of take over the NFL, having a running back that can get over there and play those at a high level is going to be a huge add to Jeff Hafley's defense. I also think that the game is starting to slow down for him. You see plays now that you didn't see earlier in his career where he displays patience. Early in his career, and even early in 2023, and you still see it at times, through the entirety of this past year, where he's going a little bit too fast, and we'll talk about that in the weaknesses in just a second, but there are times where he's starting to let the game come to him, and he displays patience and waits for the play to develop, sits in his gap, and then goes and triggers and makes that play. And you can tell that the game is starting to slow down for him more and more, especially as the course of the season went on, and certainly as the course of his career went on. That's why it gives me hope that his best football is still in front of him and that the game is actually slowing down for him right in front of our eyes. And that is a huge benefit, you know, for a team that's going to take him early in the draft. Is that's what you want to see. And let me be clear, that is not something that's easy for, you know, off-ball linebackers transitioning from college to the NFL. It's a totally different game, and so much is happening in that middle of the field, so much that you have to diagnose. And for any player that it starts to slow down for a little bit more, that you start seeing that in college, that can be a benefit that maybe they can come and help you a little bit sooner rather than later. So if I'm Goody and I'm thinking, hey, we need a linebacker that can help us a little bit right now, seeing that the game slowed down for him and seeing that he got better year over year over year and played his best football in 2023, that would give me hope for him as well. All right, what else do we got here? Coverage. So we're going to talk about some of the weaknesses in coverage in a second here as well. But in go back to 2022 tape, there's a wheel route with a running back that takes him outside and then up the sideline. And Cooper just goes right with him up the sideline, gets his head turned. The only thing is he dropped a pretty easy interception, but just picture perfect coverage on a wheel route with a fast running back up the sideline and just goes with him the entire way, ran the route for him. That is a big time play for a linebacker that doesn't do a ton in coverage. There's a Texas route in 2022 where running back tries to sell that, you know, he's going in the flat and then cuts up. It's a jerk route because it makes you look like a jerk. And he just sticks with it, bats it away, knocks it down, and comes up with a big play there too. So there's not a ton of coverage snaps on tape for him, as we talked about earlier. They just didn't attack him all that much in coverage. There's another reason for that. But he was, especially go back to 2022, he showed the ability to man up on running backs specifically. There's some good tight end breakups as well, or some plays where he sticks with tight ends as well. But there are times where he gets in man coverage and he showed extreme high levels of being able to play in coverage. He's going to need some more time and seasoning at actually being able to cover in the NFL, in my opinion. But there are plays on tape that display he can do it and he has done it. He does a really nice job of reading quarterback's eyes, getting into passing lanes and batting down balls. And he has a really nice job of dropping into coverage and then reacting to what's in front of him. So his drop needs some work. His ability and fluidity, specifically laterally, is going to need some work. But he does a nice job of getting into his drop with pretty good fluidity and then attacking what's in front of him. And you can see that on tape as well. The effort is fantastic. Again, we talked about the high intensity, but he does not give up on plays and he will try to chase things down from wherever he is on the field. He continued to get better throughout his career. The Alabama game this past season was a true highlight. Three sacks all over the freaking place, double-digit tackles, big-time game against a huge opponent in Alabama. And this was per Eric Gelko, who runs the Shrine Bowl. Edgerrin Cooper attended the Shrine Bowl but didn't play. He said, Edgerrin Cooper was not 100% for the Shrine Bowl, but definitely impressed NFL teams in interviews. He showed teams that, along with being a special athlete, he has the football IQ and versatile experience to play multiple alignments early in his NFL career. So there's a lot to like here about Edgerrin Cooper, but what about those weaknesses? Number one, they did not ask him to do a ton in coverage over his career in college. And what I'll say here is, rather than putting him in coverage, what they did a lot was blitz him, use him as a spy, or let him sit in his zone from time to time. They did not ask him to do a lot. And that's why he had so few targets against him, is because whether it was that they didn't trust him or they just wanted to use his skills that he's really good at, like blitzing and spying. I get it. I understand it. But that is going to be something where he's going to get targeted probably a lot more in the NFL than he ever was in college. And how he responds to that is going to go a long way in determining the type of upside he has as an NFL player. I also think he needs to do a better job of wrapping up. Sometimes when he's playing intense football, he has the ability or the propensity to want to just level a big hit. As we see with players, especially younger players from time to time, they want to make the big hit rather than the right tackle. And I think there's times with some of that missed tackle percentage, if instead of going for the knockout punch, if he just wrapped up and got that player to the ground, we would see that tackle percentage go way down and probably be more close to elite at tackling rather than some of the big hits that he tries to go for. Also, in the second level, there are a couple of occasions where he will get juked out by shiftier players. Now, we can say that about pretty much every linebacker. If you get one-on-one in the open field against these shifty running backs, it's just sort of good luck, tip of the cap to you, what do you want him to do? But for an elite athlete with the speed that he has and the change of direction ability that he, I think, has the ability to possess, I would like to see him do a little bit better job on some of those, but I think that's going to come with just a little bit more technique work on the second level. His instincts are a little bit hit and miss. You will see at times his instincts just shoot off the page and you will see him make an unbelievable read and get to his spot before the play even develops. There are other times where you see him take a false step, go the wrong direction, not necessarily keep his gap assignment. And that's going to be something that he needs to be just a little bit more consistent with moving forward. The big thing that I will say is that there are times with that incredible speed that he has that he just plays too fast. And that's where that patience part comes in that I talked about on the strengths. When he plays with that patience, that's when he's really at his best. Now, there's a fine line there. You want him playing fast because that is when he is at his best, but you don't want him playing too fast. You don't want him rushed and you don't want him missing tackles or missing assignments because he's going 100 miles per hour. Now, some of those missed tackles that we talked about are situations where he's going so fast that a lot of players don't even get to the spot to make a missed tackle. They're not even there. He's there slowing the player down, but if he could just do a little bit better job of wrapping up, that's where it becomes elite, where he's getting to spots most other linebackers aren't, and he's getting players to the ground. So that's where you have this fine line of you want him to play fast, but it can't be rushed, it can't be hurried, and you still have to use great technique. And there are times where he needs to play more patient and make sure that he's doing what he's supposed to rather than just going with tunnel vision a million miles per hour and trying to be that heat-seeking missile and get there rather than, again, sort of the Bill Belichick, just do your job, do what you're supposed to do. He will also play a little bit too high. He's a little bit of a taller linebacker. So at times he gets a little bit too high, which can cause leverage issues when he's trying to take on blocks. Or which can cause him to be, again, a little bit more upright in coverage. Breaking down and tackling can be a little bit more of an issue. He just needs to get a little bit lower, bend those knees a little bit more, stay on his feet a little bit better, and make sure that he's able to get to those spots that he needs to with all that raw athleticism that he has. As a run defender, as good as he is, he likes to avoid blocks rather than taking them on. That's not always the worst thing in the world, because he's so fast and he can get to spots that the offensive lineman can't, that it works out a lot of times. But if you're hoping that somebody is going to be next to Quay, that's just going to start jacking offensive linemen and making it so that they're, you know, they're taken up and that Quay can go make plays or anything like that, that's not really what you're getting here in Edgerrin Cooper. You're getting another player that would like to dip around and dodge and duck and dive and whatever other dodgeball reference we're going to make here, blockers, rather than just take them on, be physical, and go make a play. It's interesting. I posted a clip of Junior Colson taking on a block from the linebacker from Michigan, taking on a block and going and making a play in the run game. And somebody posted back of like, oh, it looks pretty ordinary to me. You would be shocked. You'd be shocked. Not a lot of linebackers in today's game are able to go up, engage an offensive lineman, be the aggressor, get them off their spot, and then go make the play. It's very rare. So that's, if that's what you're hoping for, that's not what he has put on tape. I think that ability exists for him moving forward, but it's not something he did. He would rather go around the blocker or make the blocker miss or do anything besides actually take them on, you know, sort of jar them and then get off of them and go make the play. So if you're hoping for that, that's not what you're getting here out of Edgerrin Cooper. He will hunt sometimes rather effectively without thinking of what the team needs him and sort of with his own plan of attack. And that's where we talk about that tunnel vision and that sort of heat-seeking missile. He will just sometimes sort of do his own thing. And a lot of times in college, it turned out really well. In the NFL, I think they're going to use that over-aggressiveness against him. And counters and traps and those sort of things could be a big issue. That's, again, where we go back to that patience that he did display from time to time. And more as his career went along, is going to become super important. And I think the thing that he needs to remember is, if he's patient and he holds his ground and stays in his gap, he's still faster than, you know, anyone. Like, he's still going to get there. He still can use that raw athleticism. But if you overshoot it and then they counter on you, you're out of position and it's going to cause big plays for the other team. And you certainly don't want that as well. And he's a little bit light. He will struggle with run defense against bigger offensive linemen. And that's probably why he doesn't do a lot of taking on offensive linemen, is because he's light, he's fast, he's explosive, and he'd rather get around them rather than taking them on. And that, again, is something that they're just going to have to weigh out if that's the sort of caliber or type of linebacker that they want. But again, he's heavier than an Isaiah McDuffie and not that far off from a Quay Walker either. How would he fit with the Packers? Well, let's go back to Brian Gutekunst's statement, because I know a lot of people are saying, listen, Quay Walker is a weak side linebacker. And if you're really thinking about it, Edgerrin Cooper should also be a will. Like, that's their both of their ideal positions. Brian Gutekunst didn't see it that way. And I believe him at his word here. He said he wants two similar linebackers on that nickel defense who can do everything. He's basically saying, I want another Quay Walker, is basically what he's saying. I want two of the same guys. That's what you're getting out of Edgerrin Cooper. Like, you're basically getting a fast, athletic, non-taking on blocks, should be good in coverage, but it's going to take some time. But with, I think, a little bit more intensity, and I think a little bit better run defense and better tackling than Quay, then you're getting a very similar player. I think that fits very well within Jeff Hafley's defense. They're going to play a lot of nickel. I think somebody that can blitz, that can spy, that can get back in zone coverage, that can cover running backs out of the backfield. It's going to take a little bit of time covering some other spots, but it's all right there. And I think he's only going to get better. I think he fits within the defense. I think he fits Goody's definition for what he's looking for. And he would immediately be the starter next to Quay in all of your nickel defenses. And I'm not sold that he can't even surpass Quay as the number one linebacker sooner rather than later. Quay needs to take that next step too. He hasn't yet. He's gotten better. Year two from year one was better for Quay. But to me, he's not a solidified, absolute, for sure, number one linebacker. He still has to earn that. And Edgerrin Cooper has every right to be that as well if Green Bay takes him early in this draft. My final thoughts on this. Personally, I believe he is the number one linebacker in this draft at a pretty weak draft at the position overall. I think he's a fringe first to second round pick. I would not be shocked at all if he went late first round. I think he fits Jeff Hafley's defense very well. I think he fits Brian Gutekunst and what he wants at that position based on his definition of what he gave at the NFL league meetings. I think pick 41 feels perfect for Edgerrin Cooper. Whether or not they get him at 41, whether or not he goes first round, remains to be seen. But that, I think, is the ideal spot. I don't think he gets much past 41, even if he gets to 41. I don't think he goes super aggressive or right around like 25, but I don't think it's out of the question. And then it's just, does Green Bay, you know, want to take an aggressive approach? And I don't know that there's a ton of other players that make a lot of sense at 25. Edgerrin Cooper should. And that might be, again, a little bit over aggressive, which is why I say, can you move back 3, 4, 5 picks, pick up another third rounder and take him at pick 30? And again, if you can get him, if you think you can get him at 41 and he actually lasts till 41, that's ideal. And if you can get him in your second round pick, that's even more ideal. But my gut tells me that he goes late first or very early second, and Green Bay is either going to need to move down their first round pick or take him at their first round pick or move up their second round pick if they want a legitimate shot at Edgerrin Cooper. So the last thing I'll add here too is 2011 was the last time that an off-ball linebacker did not go in the first round. And if one goes in the first round, my feel that is going to be Edgerrin Cooper. And maybe, just maybe, that is to the Green Bay Packers either at 25 or moving down in the draft. To me, he makes sense. I think he's maybe hiding a little bit in plain sight as to who their first round pick could be. Just don't be super shocked if Edgerrin Cooper, whether it be at 25 or around that spot, ends up a Green Bay Packer come draft time. The fit is all right there. I like it for Green Bay. I think 25 is a bit rich. I think a lot of people would probably agree with that. But again, don't be super surprised that that's what ultimately ends up being the selection at some point for Green Bay, which is why I wanted to spend a great deal of time breaking him down today. Appreciate you guys a ton. That's going to do it for myself and Edgerrin Cooper for today. We'll be back tomorrow with an all new episode, a couple different directions I could go in. So we'll see, but it's going to be draft related in all likelihood, unless we get some breaking news in some capacity. We still haven't heard about Brazil, by the way, at least as of recording this, which seems absolutely crazy, but hopefully we hear about that sooner rather than later. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Mo Sada, Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Chebra Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, David Prendergast, and Dan Miller. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.